Hey, dear listener, do you enjoy listening to us ramble incoherently about Canadian politics and history? Boy, do we have a special fucking treat for you. We've got our first ever official live show at a bar.
It's at Two Crows Brewing on Brunswick Street in Halifax on Sunday, May the 26th at 8 p.m. And if you go to CanadianPoliticsIsBoring.com, if you look at the banner at the top, it will take you to the tickets so that you can book a ticket and come and spend some quality time. It is going to be a very intimate affair. There are like only about 50 tickets available.
It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to drink a lot. We're going to quiz. Reese is going to quiz me at the end, but he's also going to quiz the audience and see if they know more than I do. And any alcohol you buy, Reese and I, we promise to drink it, no matter how much it is. If you want to hold our hair while we barf in the plants outside of the bar, we'll do that for you.
So go to CanadianPoliticsIsBoring.com, click the banner at the top, and on Sunday, May the 26th at Two Crows Brewing on Brunswick Street, we will see you there.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Reese, my man, my dear, dear Welsh man, my slippery and often naked Welsh man, my wet and slimy, my always hungry.
Just get on with it.
How are you doing, buddy? What's up?
What
are you
I'm good.
What's happening today? What's today's episode?
We're going to talk about the amazing story of a cocaine-filled aeroplane that crashed in New Brunswick. Special guest, James Mullinger, famous comedian from New Brunswick.
Sweet.
Hello,
that
gentlemen.
That all sounds awesome.
Yay.
Hello, James.
Am I supposed to...
No, James,
you
can talk.
Okay.
You can talk. We're about to do the titles, though.
I apologize.
Now!
just make sure to dance. Politics and candidates is a snooze fest. Paying attention is one hell of a test. But dig a little deeper, it's a dumpster fire. Sex, drugs, corruption, and everyone's a liar. Assassination, genocides, overpriced bread. A prime minister who talks to the dead. A province that tried to ban all cars. A premier smoking crack in strip bars. So stick around, we know you won't be snoring. It's a new episode of Canadian Politics is Boring, a cool podcast with Reese and Jesse. Oh yeah.
Hello and welcome to Canadian Politics is Boring. My name's Reese, and with me is Jesse and special guest James Mullinger.
Hello, everyone. Jesse and Reese, it's an honor to be here. I've been listening to this show for many years, like most people. So,
that's
it's
so
great
cool.
to be in it. I'm in the thing I listen to and love. So thank you.
That's so cool. Thank you so much for saying that.
Yeah, thanks, James. Also, you have a lot more energy than me and Jesse.
I'm drinking a coffee. I'm hoping it'll help. It's a weird, weird day today in Spain. I'm in Fuengirola, Spain, and the skies, it's like a volcano went off somewhere. But like, I checked the news. I couldn't find anything because like the skies are all like beige and like it's blotted out the sun and the waves on the sea, which are normally just super calm every single moment of every day. They're like just so much really high crashing waves all over the place. I'm like, what is happening? And like,
This could be a clip that they use on the news once the tsunami that is about to completely eclipse the resort you're in. This could be the last clip. So I'm just going to quickly say, follow me at James Mullinger. If this has gone global with the news that Jesse's family perished in the great disaster of 2024. Anyway, I hope that doesn't happen. But similarly unpredictable weather here in New Brunswick too. Walked into the YMCA this morning with it snowing and then walked out and the sun was shining down. So New Brunswick and Spain, exactly the same.
Exactly the same. Yep.
I've had sunshine, hailstone, sunshine, snow, high winds, sunshine, snow. And now it's gone back to sunshine again.
I mean, that's just typical Nova Scotia. That's why.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's not make this episode about weather.
All four seasons. but it is about snow. So
it is about snow.
It is about snow.
So Jesse, you don't know what this episode's about. James does because he wrote an article on this. And just to kind of cue you off on it. So 2 days ago, nearly $200 million worth of cocaine was seized in Halifax.
Oh, my God.
You missed this. It was 1.5 tons in a container examination facility. But
so the big order for your live event later this month is exactly, is now in. It's going to need to be another shipment ordered for the big Canadian Politics is Boring first live boozy event.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Exactly. I think what'll happen is that we'll have to give away mugs of free cocaine to get people to turn up. So James, you wrote an article about an amazing story in 1989, which is 35 years ago today, we worked out.
It is indeed, yes. So it was April the 3rd in 1989. I will clarify, I commissioned a feature, and it was written, okay. It was written by someone else. It was for my magazine, The Maritime Edit, and it was pitched by an amazing journalist by the name of Andrew McGilligan, who, again, pitched me this story, which I thought sounded completely made up. I was like, this cannot be.
Sorry, he pitched you this story for an article in the magazine? Or
yes, he pitched it for a story to run in this magazine that my wife
and I
published. Yeah.
Oh, very cool.
And the story involves, I mean, so many things. It involves 500 kilograms of cocaine. It involves a jailbreak, Pablo Escobar, armed revolutionary forces, an opera singing smuggler. It is arguably the strangest tale in Maritime's history, I would say. It all happened, or it kicked off 35 years ago today, when a plane loaded to the gills with 500 kilos of Pablo Escobar's cocaine crashed just outside Fredericton in a tiny place called Burt's Corner.
Is it Burt's Corner? I typed a Butts Corner.
Oh,
funnier.
Good, but Butts is indeed funnier. Maybe it is Butts. I mean, again, I've only been here 10 years.
There is an R in it. I just missed doing my dyslexia because I wanted to see Butts.
Butts, yeah. So, Butts Corner.
I'm just Googling it now. Is there? It's Burt's. Damn it. It looks like Butts. It just like
the most insane story ever. You guys are still looking for things that make it more weird when it couldn't possibly be. You hear more about cocaine, singing, smugglers, armed revolutionaries, Uzi's been smuggled on boats to St. Stephen. You guys are going, okay. But was it in a place
it's a real that sounds
like Butt?
Yeah, so the story would be perfect if it was called Butt's Good.
That's the one thing missing from the story. Yeah. Reese, do you not know this story? Are you being taught this like I am?
No. I've done some of my own research as well, because James sent the article over, and I was, you know the story very well, James, but it's interesting because at this time, the Caribbean was being so aggressively patrolled that in the late 80s, the cartels switched to Canada as the entry point for cocaine to America. So at this time, it was kind of crazy. So The New Brunswick has got 90 remote airstrips, which are ideal for smuggling. You could land there at night and nobody would even know because they're run by lumber companies or kind of government or firefighting airstrips, totally deserted. And then you could just cross the border by land into the United States with cocaine.
Or then get it to Montreal as well.
Yes.
The two spots were just perfect for,
Wow.
the first half of 1989, there were 19 suspicious planes that had entered Canadian airspace that no one could explain for. So kind of this crash happened right at the height of New Brunswick being essentially like a really... Cocaine capital of the world, exactly.
Hence the illustration that we commissioned for the...
James has got a page of the magazine where there's a tiny little pile of cocaine, like with a little umbrella in it.
It should be pointed out. Yeah, the headline for the feature was Narcos Fredericton.
I love that TV show, is my favorite.
Well, the number one thing that comes out of this story is you just think, how on earth has a movie not been made about this? I mean, to go through some of the details that happen after this. So the plane did crash. Interestingly, it was part of an undercover sting in that the people on the ground that were waiting to meet the two guys on the plane, one of whom a surname was Escobar, and he was a relative of Pablo Escobar. What they didn't realize is that they were meeting undercover agents. So these undercover agents were there to greet them, thanks to basically a tip off, a sting, a supergrass had come to them. Someone who was, you know, working for the cartel and was, you know, their life was in danger. Same reason most people turn supergrass.
Super, what is it?
Supergrass. Oh, yeah, maybe it's called something else here. A snitch. A rat.
Yeah, a rat.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I got some more information. So apparently it was a Canadian pilot called Doug Jaworski. And he'd been working for the cartel, and the RCMP offered him $200,000 to flip and become an informant. But apparently the RCMP, the plan was for the aeroplane to land, and then the RCMP were going to follow who they took the drugs to.
Yeah.
And what actually happened is...
Because they were supposed to cut the trees. The RCMP... Forgot to cut the trees. So they said, you've got to cut the trees so we can land safely. Something which, let's face it, I'm not saying that drug dealers are better organized than the RCMP, but I am saying if you told a load of drug dealers to cut some trees so we can land the plane with 500 kilos on it, the drug dealers would cut the fucking trees. But the RCMP didn't bother to cut the trees, so the plane crash landed. So the plane crashed. So you got a crash plane full of coke. I mean, they did still, obviously... They did intercept the...
I'm a little confused. So, like, they needed to build a runway?
No, the runway was
there. No, the runway was there.
The trees needed to be cut back for a plane of this size to land.
They told the Colombian pilots they were going to cut the trees down so it would be safe to land. And they asked
either side of the runway sort of thing.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, yeah. But the RCMP, one of them forgot their hedge trimmers and a ladder. For whatever
and the
reason.
Plane crashed. That's amazing.
So I imagine it must have taken the wheels out and they had to do an emergency landing so that the RCMP didn't get an idea of who was going to receive the cocaine. All they got was the two pilots and the cocaine haul, which still is a good headline, but it could have been a much bigger sting than it was.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, which again, I mean, just that in itself is huge. So yes, whoever it was going to and whoever they were going to be traveling to, that never came to light. But of course, yeah, so they arrest the two pilots who are both, so it's Fernando Jaramillo was one, and then the other was Jose Ali Escobar, who obviously is a cousin of Pablo Escobar. So they've got, so they land, the police seize the 500 kilos. They crash land.
They do an RCMP landing.
So the place they crash land is Wayman Field near Keswick Ridge. So they're basically, it struck a tree on the end of the runway and then appeared to touch down really hard. But then it made a successful landing for a short time, but started swerving left and right. And basically one of the landing gear legs had broken off and the aircraft ended up on a snowbank alongside the runway. And there's amazing pictures of this online.
Wow. Okay.
So they leave the pickup. They get picked up by the police and they get taken to... a jail in Fredericton. But this is when
it's the most secure jail, sure. Yeah.
Well, quite. I mean, there was the cops, the people in this jail don't have guns. What happens? Oh, the pilots. Oh, that's right. No, so, yeah. So they're not arrested immediately, are they? Because at first they are.
The RCMP still try and make the sting happen.
They try and make the sting happen.
Even though they crash.
So the RCMP take them to St. Hubert for some barbecue chicken. I mean, tell me, Seth Rogen and James Franco in a movie, them playing the two cops. Tell me this is not. So the cops take them to City Motel in Fredericton, and then they go to St. Hubert for barbecue chicken.
That's amazing. I found some quotes from the period. There was a guy called Barry Grant who was described as a local resident, saying no one was surprised that there were drugs coming in. But as much as 1,100 pounds on a one plane load, that raised a few eyebrows. And then there was also Luella Wood, a crime reporter who covered the case for the Daily Gleaner.
I'm sorry. Said, say that name again.
Luella Wood.
No, but with her title. I feel like...
crime reporter for the Daily Gleaner.
No, but I feel like Luella... What's her name?
Wood.
Wood. Crime reporter. I feel like that's how she introduces herself.
Oh, yes. She would definitely, yes. Lois Lane. Yeah, it's definitely like, yeah.
Luella Wood.
Luella Wood, reporter. Crime reporter.
Rhys Waters, obituaries. So she said, I think. Yeah, sorry, you got James.
No, go ahead. No, I was just going to say, Jesse perished in a tsunami, but no, we won't.
That's all I'm known for. I'll take it. That's fine. Exactly.
They'll make a film, they'll remake a film, and they'll cast somebody as you.
If I got to go, if I got to die in an interesting way, I think a tsunami is a pretty good one. I don't know. What would you guys pick? If you could pick the most interesting way, if you could choose how to die.
Hit by a plane full of cocaine. While I'm standing there trimming trees that I was supposed to trim the day before. Hit by the plane.
While you're up the ladder.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good one.
I would have said meteor strike on my house while I'm asleep.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one.
Yeah.
So I have a question for you, James. Yes. Unless you were finished...
I'll get back to Luella Wood, crime reporter.
Yeah. My question was like, because I already know they end up in a jail in New Brunswick, but first the cops try to continue the sting operation. They bring them to a seedy motel and then to St. Hubert's for barbecue chicken to keep like trying to do the sting. My question is, if the sting doesn't work for whatever reason, right? You're still making a connection with an Escobar. You know, why not try it again? Why reveal yourselves to be cops? Why put them in a New Brunswick jail? Why not just like throw your hands in the air and say, okay, it didn't work this time, but it can work again next time. You're trying to get bigger fish here.
That's a very good point. I mean that you are thinking very big picture. It's funny. You are thinking very big picture. I must admit, I'm so small-minded that to my mind it was kind of like, why would you risk doing anything else, just grab them immediately, and that was kind of my because the next day on the April the 4th they flew them to Toronto, where they were in theory waiting to fly back to Colombia, and then the Mounties, which were delaying their arrest until obviously the distribution network had kind of come to get the drugs, but then that didn't happen. And the drugs were tracked to a townhouse in Montreal. Actually, they did arrest some Colombians that were tied to the cartel there. So they did arrest the connection. But yes, I mean, to your point, it could have become something much bigger. But I think they were kind of like, we've done well enough. So they got the connections. So then
I want to know, like, at what point did they decide to stop pretending?
I think when they basically
and to arrest them.
So at this point,
once they finish building their happy meals,
once they finish their St. Hubert chicken,
that would be
the funny focus of the movie. If you had Franco and Seth Rogen playing two cops, it would be the period between on the fifth of April when the police are about to conduct the raid on the townhouse in Montreal to get the cocaine, and they're keeping the two smugglers entertained. That would be the move.
Gone bowling.
Yeah, that would be the so they are staying at the Constellation Hotel in Toronto, and then the police basically break down the door, arrest them. But this is the bit where it gets really weird. So they're in Toronto,
So hold on, just to follow what you're saying. So they were arrested. They were put in a jail briefly.
No, correction. They weren't put in a jail. They weren't put in a jail yet. They
weren't put in a jail in New Brunswick.
They have not yet been. They have landed, and they're still being coaxed into thinking that
everything's fine.
Everything's fine. They're meeting with their connects.
Oh, okay. So then they're going to Montreal, still thinking
the drugs,
everything's hunky dory.
The drugs get unloaded. The drugs end up in Montreal. The two pilots are in Toronto, thinking that they are about to fly back to Colombia.
So they flew. They went from New Brunswick to Toronto.
Yes, or to Montreal. Either way.
To Montreal. I'm just trying to follow along. I'm not trying to.
Oh yes. No. So basically,
he's trying to see if we're making this up.
Yeah. So basically, yeah, I know. So basically, quizzing you later. Oh yes. So correction. On the 4th of April, the pilots fly to Montreal, and they're waiting to go back to Colombia. The drugs, basically, the police are tracking the drugs, and they end up in a townhouse in Montreal. They arrest the people that are there who are receiving the drugs. Then they arrest the two guys, the two pilots.
Oh, okay. That's where my confusion was, because earlier you did say that they were arrested and put into a jail in New Brunswick.
Then
you said that they took them to Chicken. And I'm like, when did they arrest them and send them to jail in New Brunswick?
Well, this is the weird part. But they're in Toronto where they get arrested, but then they get taken back to New Brunswick. And that's the bit that I really don't understand, where
you're taken back to New Brunswick and put in a jail in New Brunswick.
Yes, in a jail that is such a... A non-jail-like building that it is now. The building is now Science East, which is like a children's museum slash science center. Weirdly,
I hope they learned something.
They're not even the most crazy people that have been in that jail, because Alan Legere, the Miramichi serial killer, he has also been housed at that Science East, which tragically, actually, last week Science East has revealed it's closing. But it was an amazing science museum for kids. I was actually in there a couple of months ago. It's a stone building on Brunswick Street in Fredericton. So they are sent there. Back then it was called the York County Jail. So I don't quite understand why they decided to take two dangerous criminals out of Toronto, which I'm assuming has slightly bigger, better equipped jails. They're brought back.
They were sentenced to 22 years, weren't they, and denied bail.
Yes.
It was $200,000 bail the lawyer argued for, and then they were both, essentially.
But that's a lot later. That's a lot
later. I have a guess.
Oh, that would be a lot later.
They were sent to New Brunswick. It's just a guess, but it has to do with the incompetence of our government, the ongoing incompetence of our government, no matter who's in power. might it have to do with where the first crime was committed? Like, where did they enter the country with drugs? They have to be incarcerated in that province.
Potentially.
You know what I mean? And like, they continued the sting in other provinces, but if they were to be arrested, they were to be arrested for the first major crime, which is bringing drugs in. Where did that happen? It happened in New Brunswick. Put them in New Brunswick jail. I don't know.
That would make
our government is fucking insane. You know, so
yeah,
that's my guess.
That sounds right. So they end up back in there. There's all these stories. This is where the opera singing part comes in. Where
I forgot about that.
Yes, to keep prisoners. Well, to your point of your previous episode when you were talking about the clink with the ring. In New Brunswick, the way they obviously couldn't have an ice rink in the middle of this tiny, tiny, tiny jail, but they could give the prisoners guitars to keep them entertained. One of these guys ended up. He was sitting there playing, singing. Jay, the Escobar, would be singing a guitar playing guitar and singing like an opera singer in Spanish. So again,
Escobar is singing in Spanish in a New Brunswick prison.
Yes, there you go.
For the guitar. There's
the tagline for the second movie.
Exactly.
And then there's a visitor where a visitor arrives. A couple arrive to visit the prisoners. They come in. They look around. Anyway, long story short, quite why they were allowed in, given these guys are from the deadliest organized crime syndicate of all time, who've literally killed hundreds of thousands, possibly more people.
Yes,
right. It transpired.
Maybe they brought barbecue chicken with them.
Well, that's true. Maybe they brought maybe they promised to sing for the guards. I don't know.
Are you talking about the Escobars or the people who killed all those people?
Yes.
The
Medellin cartel.
The cartel.
This is so close to Breaking Bad with the like Los Polos Hermanos chicken.
I know.
Between
the chicken and the jailbreaks and the absurdity. So this couple visits, and anyway, long story short, it transpires that they were visiting to case the joint. So they have left with detailed plans of the prison. So
hold on, what? Who? Sorry. The visitors to the prison were there. From the cartel to case the joint.
Exactly.
Yeah, to get them out.
What was their ruse when they showed up as visitors? Like, what were they?
Just to visit the prisoners. We are friends of the prisoners. We are here. This is what I'm saying. Why it's so insane that the deadliest cartel in the world, they are prisoners there, and then someone turns them and says, "Hey, we want to come and say hi." They let them in. So basically,
James, I was going to say there was. I read in one news article that their wives flew in to visit them.
Right. Well, their wives. They.
Yeah. They said their wives flew in from Colombia to visit them in prison. According to the guards, they were both absolute knockouts.
Yes.
It was pretty clear the ladies were doing some reconnaissance for a future breakout and probably saw some things they shouldn't have seen.
Right. That's the article. Yeah, that's exactly it. So basically, what happens next is Pablo Escobar sends a breakout crew to break them out of jail, or indeed, obviously, silence them to stop them from talking. So,
okay,
how this plan, which literally
they're going to decide that on the way there,
which was like, that?
Are they going to decide which one they want to do on the way to the prison?
Well, no, I just don't know because I'm not in league with the cartel, so I don't know. That's me not wanting to speculate and just saying they are coming in theory to break them out, but equally what the cartels tend to do is they like to also silence people. So it could have been a breakout crew, it could have been a hit squad. But
sorry, I thought Pablo Escobar had given instructions, like you're going to take a crew, you're going to fly to this prison in New Brunswick, and you're going to break them out. Or kill them.
Right. Well, that's a very plausible. It could have been the instructions. How this comes to light. So what happens next is a crew arrives in various different. A couple of different crews arrive. But this. Let's look at. I mean, this could have ended in one of the deadliest bloodbaths. You've got this crew of cartel members turning up to break out. They are not going to. There was a joke, I believe, in one of the newspapers where what were the police and what were the guards of the prison going to say? Were they going to say, you know, stop, or we will say stop again?
That's my dad's joke.
Oh, is it?
That's my dad used to use that on stage all the time.
Oh, really? Oh, funny. Yeah. Oh, I actually read it in one of these articles. It's so funny.
James, did you see the the story about the lawyer on the airplane spotting the so apparently the defense lawyer of the two pilots was on a flight to Fredericton to one of the preliminary hearing, and he saw four Hispanic men sitting on the airplane, which was quite a rare sight for New Brunswick in the 80s, not known as Canada's most diverse melting pot. And he walked over to them and said, "Excuse me, are you going to see the two pilots?" And they turned white and said, "No, we're going to St. John."
it's funny how in that CBC article, it's slightly problematic use of the word "turned white" when you turned are describing white. Someone non-white.
I just want to do a quick I did a little bit of recon because I was like, did my father say that? And it turns out it was Robin Williams who said it. And my father, I'm pretty sure my father also said
it's
it.
Your so dad, Robin just, Williams. What?
I'm pretty sure my father was saying it.
Well, it's really, I have these poems that my grandmother wrote that everyone told me how clever granny was. And I, was going to publish them in a book that I wrote, and I googled the poem. I don't know why I thought I better just google the poem, and it turns out it's a poem that she just copied from like Wordsworth or something. And I'm like, what? Like for the whole life, like isn't Granny clever? Meanwhile, she was just
that's
copying.
Amazing.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
But apparently that lawyer didn't bother warning the RCMP.
Right. But luckily, so this is...
Hold on, sorry. What lawyer... Sorry, James. Oh, okay. Catch me up again, Reese. What are you talking about?
The lawyer who spotted those four men on the plane who were just casually going to St. John didn't bother alerting the RCMP that he was suspicious that there were these four people maybe going to visit the pilots.
But on the 13th of September, 1989... This group of men, presumably the same men, unless it was a different crew, but a group of Latino men pull into a convenience store near Edmundston, and one asks to use the phone, and the cashier notices these guys, and they're transferring goods from a van to a white Buick. Now, this is a rare, this again, the telling of this story is already problematic, because we are basically, this is an example of racial profiling work.
Yes. But in the defense of New Brunswick,
this racist clerk saved the line. Thank God she was brought up in an ill-informed household of racial stereotyping, because when she saw these four Colombian nationals outside a gas station in Edmondson and thought it was a bit weird, she called the RCMP. Who intercepted them? Actually, there's another part to this story actually in a minute. So again, it's just basically because she saw some non-white men, she called the police.
Racism for the win.
And thanks. That saved loads. It's a terrible.
But like, it's like New Brunswick was very homogenous, I guess.
Right,
so
right.
Being a small town person, Wales. Back in Wales in World War II, some Germans broke out of a prisoner of war camp. They disguised themselves as miners and got on a bus. And everyone on the bus, because they were Welsh, were talking to each other. And because they weren't talking to anyone, they were just quietly kept their mouths shut. They were like, that's weird. And they immediately reported them to the police and caught them.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
You get these kind of like local, you know, people... vibe things. I mean, it could have just been racism, though.
Yeah, well it's I guess it's that thing where things work like a stopped clock works twice a day, and in this instance, racial.
She's on the phone again. Yeah, she spotted.
Yes, yes, she's still.
She's identified more minorities on road trips.
Yeah, Julie's on the phone again.
Yeah. and now the province has become way more diverse. They've had to unplug her phone because she's just phoning 50 times a day. Going, I think it's day, happening again. No, it's not.
I wish they still charged by the minute.
So she calls the RCMP, passes on the info that there's these four men. Then, and here's another part of the story which has problematic overtones. A gas station attendant at a gas station just outside Fredericton, he also happens to be a newspaper reporter for the Daily Gleaner. But because he's not being paid enough as a journalist, so even then journalists weren't earning enough, he also works the pumps at the Irving gas station. So both his jobs are working for the Irvings.
But, oh, of course.
But one of them is pumping gas and one of them is a newspaper reporter. So he had been a journalist for the Gleaner for 10 years.
Excuse me.
But had been working at the Silverwood Irving to supplement his income because his journalism salary was so shit. And he sees a Latino man. And basically,
oh, his journalism job was shit. Sorry, I thought you said his journalism was shit.
Oh no, okay. No. So yes, yeah, because his journalism salary was shit. Yes,
okay,
he's working there at the Silverwood Irving. So he spots a Latino man and reports him to an off-duty Fredericton police officer who happens to pop in a few minutes later.
This is hilarious. Is this just a thing that happened in New Brunswick in the 80s or circa 1980, whenever this was, 1989, where if you spotted someone non-white, you automatically called the police?
I'm not sure. It's still not the case, to be honest. I mean, I get people calling the police on me just because of my accent.
Exactly.
Oh God!
Some kind of Cockney gangster walking down the street over there.
Yeah, I think
what do they say too? Like you know, they call the police. What are they reporting?
Right.
I'm not reporting a crime. I'm reporting a Latino man existing.
What's he doing? Being Latino.
I'll make sure to check in on that right away, ma'am.
Yeah. I mean, agreed. It's. Yeah, it's weird that something that this was going on so essentially so recently, 35 years ago. So he reports the guy to the police officer, and at this point, I believe they then by the time the suspects have been arrested, they'd found 22 caliber pistols, an assault rifle, an Uzi machine gun. Tear gas, a grenade, electric stun guns, throwing stars, and a machete.
Jesus.
So, I mean, can you imagine when they were loading up the gear for the breakout and they were like, these Fredericton cops, they're going to stay stopped once or twice. We've got Uzis, we've got assault rifles, we've got tear gas, we've got grenades. We better get the throwing stars just in case things get naughty.
Yeah, if we run out of ammo, we need some throwing stars.
We need some throwing stars.
Billy's really good with those, aren't you, Billy?
So in my head, I always imagine throwing stars. They're like a gunfight and stuff, and people just like someone throws a throwing star, but all it does is just bounce off somebody's clothes. the only way I can imagine it going in my head.
So they were arrested. They didn't even make it to the prison.
Yes, they were arrested. So, I mean, if they had made it to the prison, that would have been a bloodbath. Like, given what they had the weaponry they had and the armory they had, and that the York County Jail had nothing. I mean, maybe they had a gun, but really didn't have. So
wow.
It's called the gun, and it's in a safe that no one's going to go to.
So at first, I think they thought that the five men had been sent to take. So it's the four guys and the one guy. So those were two separate sightings. They had seven passports. So basically, that's when they realized that the two extra passports were to bring the two guys back. But I think their first belief was that the guys were there to collect to take delivery of a second cocaine shipment. But actually, yeah, they were there to break them out. And basically, with an Escobar, you know, family member in jail and the drug shipment, you know, the fact that Pablo sent this crew, all of whom got arrested. I mean, this is an example of Canadian, you know, law and order working.
I got to ask. When they were arrested, were they also put in the same jail?
That's a sitcom.
It just slowly fills up with cartel members. which weirdly would have ended up being, I mean, the diversity in Fredericton at the time was going through the roof thanks to that prison.
You know what? This is a good point. So I'm not sure. But what
like
I do
everyone
know,
Pablo Escobar sends to New Brunswick ends in jail.
Oh yes,
so in this tiny prison with no guards and no guns. Like, what is happening in Canada? What is?
And then even like the ones arrested in like Vancouver are being transported across the country to come to
the New Brunswick jail.
It's just less paperwork.
And they're all in there just doing blow, playing guitar, singing opera, eating St. Hubert's chicken.
Getting visits from attractive women.
Yeah. But yeah, the plan was basically was to cut the fence, blow a hole through the side of the jail and break out the prisoners. So, I mean, again, as you say, Breaking Bad type stuff.
I mean, it really sounds way, way, way more complicated than it needed to be. It was a simple equation. The cartel had guns. The prison guards did not.
Yes.
Show up with a gun in your hand, four men with a gun in your hand, walk through the door, point it at the guards, and say, release my friends.
It's a good point. Like, yeah, you're right. Just basically walk in. And I mean, even just walking in and saying, please, could have probably done the trick. I think to be fair, what it probably is, the reason they went to these lengths was that it would be very hard for, I think, a member of a cartel in Colombia to even imagine that anywhere in the world there would be a jail like a New Brunswick jail.
Exactly.
In the same way, when I tell people that I live in a place where I don't lock my front door, don't lock my car, in England, like when my grandma talked about, like, you know, growing up in a seaside town in England in the 50s, not locking her front door, everyone else says, no, that's bollocks. You actually did have to. But yet in New Brunswick in 2024, you don't have to lock your door. So I think
it's a thing in certain communities. I lived in Bonavista, Newfoundland, and nobody locked doors.
Right.
That's the case. You have to hide from a polar bear.
So try and explain that to someone in England.
Or, you know, right.
It would be completely unfathomable that would not be. So that's what kind of what I think is. I think when they sent the breakout crew, they were not thinking this jail is basically an open door.
Yeah.
Essentially, it's like have you seen The Gentleman on Netflix, where Ray Winstone's basically in a jail that is essentially a 5-star resort?
It reminds me of, it's like, I don't know why this is another World War II story. I'm not obsessed with World War II. I like it. It's pretty good.
I like it.
The Russians had these really dated biplanes that flew very slowly, and the Germans had these very fast, high-tech, fast planes, and the German planes were too fast to actually do anything. They just whizzed past the Russians without actually being able to intercept them. And it's almost like the Colombians were preparing for this kind of, like, they were going to break into some high-tech American prison. And what they got was this Fredericton prison, and just over-prepared themselves for it.
Is there, I got to ask, is there did they send more people once?
Well, this is what's weird is, and this is one of the things that, one of the kind of takeaways of the story is that Pablo Escobar is not known as a man to give up. You know, like generally it's, so they all get arrested. They all go to trial. They're locked up there for a bit and then they're sent back to their respective countries. Like it's all, like basically everything maps out in terms of a law and order story. It's actually incredibly, apart from the not chopping down of the trees, it does kind of suggest the legal system did its job. But crucially, like how did Pablo Escobar then go, oh, well, forget about it. We'll just leave it. It's quite remarkable that this is where it ended. He would normally be the kind of person to go, okay, we'll send back a bigger hit crew.
Right. Let's firebomb New Brunswick.
Firebomb New Brunswick. And it's weird. Like, I mean, again, not saying that killing millions of people is a good thing, but when you hear that Pablo Escobar was shot and killed a day after his 44th birthday. And I kind of think, you know, I just turned 47, and you kind of think, I could live to be 100. I would never achieve as much as Pablo Escobar achieved in a mere 44 years. Like, I mean,
he's
I don't
a,
know
he's
if,
a,
I,
he's
know
a high point.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd feel bad about not achieving as much as Pablo Escobar.
Well, he did a lot. I mean, not the most impressive thing was looking 65 at 44. That picture of him. See, I mean, I assumed he lived to a grand old age of 80 when you look at the picture of him.
Cocaine's a hell of a drug.
It's a hell of a drug. Apparently, when it's pure, it's the fountain of youth.
So one of the things part of that plan as well that made me laugh was they were gonna cross into Maine.
Yes.
At Saint Stephen, they had a rubber boat.
Saint Stephen. So
they could then travel down to Miami and then back to Colombia. So, like, I love the fact they even had a rubber boat.
They bought a rubber boat and it was just going to be. I mean, yeah, there's not a single part of this that wouldn't be a hilarious movie. Like, a movie about the whole thing. I mean, already it just sounds so outlandish. Like, Jesse, you're hearing it for the first time. I mean, your completely valid questions sum up how utterly ludicrous this is. That this is
your baffled logical questions.
Yes, because none of it makes any sense. And the whole thing itself, the fact that you could just take one tiny piece of it, like the cops and the cartel in St. Hubert's together. That's a two-hour movie by itself. Let alone dinghies filled with Uzis.
He's trying to imagine the small talk they were making.
They had an inflatable rubber raft that they were going to put everybody in, that they, like, all four people and then the two from the jail, and the six of them were going to go down the coast.
Oh, they were going to do multiple trips back and forth.
that makes perfect sense. Oh, multiple trips. Oh, well, you should have said, we're just going back and forth. I'll take two and I'll come back. Yeah, that was it. They were going to switch vehicles, drive to St. Stephen and cross the St. Croix River in the rubber boat. And the other group would be waiting on the main side of the river. So it's actually not very far across, but basically meet them across the other side and put them on a flight to Colombia. So, I mean, you could swim that.
Okay. I thought they were going to go down like from Maine to Florida.
Basically across the bridge. Yeah.
But it did. This didn't stop the flow of cocaine through Canada, though, because 3 years later, there was a DC-3 plane, which had 40 passenger seats, which had been ripped out, that was forced to land by fighter jets in Quebec, that they brought down, that again had, it was 280 miles north of Montreal. And it was Canada's biggest drug seizure from one of those airplanes. So it kept carrying on. It was still, it's still a thing today.
I think today.
But they were stopped and arrested?
Yes, the fighter jets forced it to land, essentially. But they're doing Latinos, this military help.
The pirates Latinos? Is that why?
Police arrested three Colombians and three Canadians after the chase.
Yeah, okay. The Canadians. The Canadians.
There's an air traffic. It was a racist air traffic controller saying, that aeroplane jet's being flown by some Latinos.
Have you ever noticed how since racism became unacceptable, crime has gone up?
Gone up, yeah. I think the moral of the story here, dear listener, is if you're a Latino, do not visit New Brunswick. Okay? Just don't do it, man. Okay?
Especially if you're going to go rafting.
Or practice your ninja star throwing skills at the trees. Don't do that. Yeah. All right, so I have a request, James. I'm glad you're here for this. If you want to join for,
I'm not doing an improvised.
Oh, you sure are. Come on, It's going to be amazing, Reese. It's going to be amazing.
I don't have one in me.
You've got one in you. I know. Trust me. This is great. You're going to love this. You're going to love this. Okay, just a short one. So we've been starting to do these improvised. Do you know Heritage Minutes? Canadian Heritage.
Oh, yes.
Minutes?
Yeah.
So we've started doing improvised Heritage Minutes. And basically, I'll set the stage, and then Reese acts it out and narrates it. But now we've got a guest here. So what I'd like to do is do a short improvised Heritage Minute where it starts. So Reese is one of the undercover cops, and James, you can be the Escobar brother who was in the plane. And
you don't have to do an accent.
Yeah, I'm not doing it. Trust me. I am not. I do not want to be tarred with the same brush as a racist petrol pump attendant or a racist Daily Cleaner journalist. I'm not doing, thank you. I went to the boys, but okay. Carry on, sorry.
So Reese, it'll start with the plane crash and you have to run over, help them out of the plane, and then convince them immediately to go to St. Hubert's for barbecue chicken. And then
okay.
cut to barbecue chicken at St. Hubert's, where you're trying your best and failing to get information out of Escobar. So we're gonna have like, if you listen to this afterwards, James, there'll be music, there'll be sound effects.
We might give up, if we want to give up halfway through is fine.
No. I love this. I'm ready to do it. I'm excited.
Okay.
So set the scene for us, Reese.
In a small town up north, where the pine trees grow tall, lived a young Mountie, beloved by all. He watched over the land with pride and might. One day he made a grave oversight. There was a runway nearby where planes would land. Passengers would come and go, led by the Mountie's hand. But he forgot to trim the tops of the trees above. A tragic mistake caused a plane crash,
Hi guys, everyone. All right, I'm really sorry. One of us is one of those new electric hedge trimmers. I didn't charge the battery, and I'm afraid of heights. Are you okay?
You fucking! We told you to cut the trees.
Well, you know, it's been a bit busy. My kid had a hockey tournament.
Listen. There's a shitload of gear still on the plane. Well, we've got to get the gear off, right? And we are fucking clucking for some chicken. Excuse the pun. So, get the gear off. Don't do any of it. It'll ruin your appetite. We'll eat the St. Hubert's is my favourite, right? Get the gear off.
You heard about that? Up.
Yeah, St. Hubert.
Do you have those in Colombo?
No, the only reason I'm here. Pablo said, Pablo said, go to this fucking arse end of nowhere shithole, New Brunswick. Take the fucking gear. I said, no chance. He said, they've got the best chicken in the world, St. Hubert. So get the gear off. But seriously, don't even have a little sniff of it. It'll put you off your chicken, right? We'll get tucked into the gear later. Right, get the gear off, sharpish.
All right, I'll back up the Dodge Caravan. Let me just put my lumbar support on for lifting.
Lovely jubby. So, while you do that, well, I'm just going to sing some opera.
Right, get in the van because St. Hubert's, I think it closes in about 30 minutes.
Perfect.
But they'll stay open because I work a lot of late shifts as a police. No, as a as a window cleaner.
Do you? Well, if you're working a late shift, I've got something in here that'll help keep you awake tonight. So
I'm an undercover police officer.
Listen, we'll get down to St. Hubert's. Don't stop for any gas. I've heard that the gas attendants here in New Brunswick are fucking racist pants. Let's go.
Yeah, it's better just to run out of fuel and walk the rest of the way, in my opinion.
Okay.
I sat there in that dim lit room, there thick with smoke and suspicion, my heart racing, my senses on high alert, trying to maintain my composure. Across the table sat the man I'd been tracking, a dangerous figure of the underworld, as he devoured his barbecue chicken. I couldn't escape the fear that my cover might be blown. Every bite he took, every smudge of sauce on his face filled me with unease. I had to act normal, blend in, pretend like I belong in this secret world. But my mind raced with thoughts of what would happen if he discovered my true identity. The undercover ordeal.
There you go, it's on me.
You can have whatever you want. As many, you can have a side, have a baked potato instead of fries. Mix it up. Oh. Do you have baked potatoes in Colombia?
Of course, we've got baked potatoes. But the thing is, nothing is as good as a baked potato in New Brunswick, thanks to the proximity of your province to Prince Edward Island. That's it, which is a place that Pablo has promised me he will send me to next time, due to the fact that he knows I'm a big fan of Anne and Green Gables.
Does he like red sand?
Loves red sand, prefers white powder, but he's not fussy. He'll sometimes cut it with the red sand when he's doing some work with a gentleman named Gustavo Fring. Oh, what's that? What's that feedback I hear? Are you wearing a wire?
I just need to talk to my wife a minute to let her know I not to not cook me supper because I'm about to feast on St. Hubert's barbecue chicken. Hello. Come in, dear. Come in. Yes. The chicken is in the basket. Okay. Little Timmy in. I will be late home from work. Over. Yeah, she's lovely. You'd love it.
Can't wait to meet her. My wife is absolutely bloody gorgeous. And I tell you what, if I get banged up in the next week, right, she might be visiting. You can get a good look at her. Ooh, lovely. Get a good look at her.
I know a prison guard who'd love that.
Do you? Well, I hope I don't end up there, since, I'm quite adept at spotting the older filth now after many years in this business. Anyway, I'm going to get back to my delicious chicken. Hey, do you like opera?
I'm more of a acid house kind of guy, to be honest.
That's fair enough. Why is it that my accent's changed from quite posh English when you landed to now sounding a bit East London Cockney wide boy?
Brain damage.
Brain damage. Surprisingly accurate assertion. The prognosis is correct.
I think we're done though, Jesse.
That was great. That was great. That was a little scrappy.
Bravo.
So, James, you've got a new podcast that we need you to talk about.
Well, thank you. But please bleep the C word so I don't get any Canadian politics is boring hate mail.
I'll bleep it with the sound of someone snorting.
Or a chicken.
Yeah.
yes, indeed. New podcast, Me Talking Bollocks, which if you have stayed until now, you will be able to tell that Me Talking, it should have been called Me Talking Bollocks. It's Mullinger's Weekly Ramble, produced by the amazing people at Podstarter, conceived by the amazing people at Podstarter. And I'm very, very excited to be doing it. It's me sitting in this spot talking bollocks once a week. I say in this spot, wherever I happen to be in the world. I'm often here, but next week I'll be recording it from Toronto. And this week, guys know what it's like. I mean, I know your podcast has been going for many years now, and it has been phenomenally successful. When you first start, you don't know if anyone's going to listen. And we put it out there into the world. And all my stories seem to involve the St. John YMCA. But I'm at the YMCA, and this lady comes up to me and goes, she pulls out her earphone, and she goes, I'm listening to you right now. And I'm like, cool. That's nice. And then an hour later, I'm outside Shoppers Drug Mart, seeing if they've got any of Pablo's goods in there. And outside Shoppers Drug Mart, and Chris Pam says, and a car comes by, and a woman winds down the window, turns up her volume, and blasts the podcast out to her. I know, and I'm like, okay, this is nice.
That's never happened to us.
It's never happened to us. That's amazing. So what's the name of your show again?
Mullinger's Weekly Ramble.
Not Me Talking Bollocks.
Not Me Talking Bollocks. So, yeah,
Too late to change the title of your show.
True. That's true. Me Talking Bollocks is a valid description of it. Of course, I mean, I guess the thing is, again, sounding like this in New Brunswick means you get you do get the cops called on you quite a lot due to the fact that you don't sound like you're from here.
Sorry, the prison has a pretty good musical taste, from what I've heard. Live music every Thursday and Friday.
And attractive women turning up to visit.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you so much for doing this, James. No, we'll see you soon.
Thank you, guys.
It's been an honor.
Huge fan of everything you guys do. And Jesse, super honored to finally meet you, and especially you taking time out of your holiday to Did it?
Oh my God, this is a blast. Are you kidding me? And what an incredible story. Thank you for bringing that to our attention. Unbelievable. Holy shit. I can't believe I'm constantly surprised by the stuff that I've learned on this show, that what surprises me is A, that I've never heard of these unbelievable stories, and B, no one's done anything with them. Like, there's no movies, there's no miniseries, there's no, maybe a novel here and there, but like, not that I've heard of. Like, it's insane. Some of the stories that come out.
People are busy pitching scripts about their feelings instead of the crazy shit that happens.
It's true. Well, also, the weird thing is, of course, it's that thing of, this is the genius of your podcast, and same by listening to what you guys do, I've learned so many things. But it's that thing in Canada of everything gets undiscovered. Everything is kind of left to, whether it be our talents or our stories, they all just get forgotten and lost. And meanwhile, in America, you can have a story that's or in England, a story that's tiny, that there's been 10 movies made of, and yet no one's mining where the absolute gold is, and that is racist petrol pump clerks in
saving the day.
You know what's really unfortunate is that probably that petrol pump's probably going to tenant's probably going to listen to this. And we've spent the last hour calling them a massive racist, and now I'm going to get a message, or it's going to be one of my neighbors. And
I'm sorry, Doreen.
Whoever, I'm sure you didn't call the police just because they were a different skin color to you. I'm sure there was other reasons. Yeah.
Maybe you saw a flash of a grenade or an assault rifle or something.
Yeah, I'm sure you that's what you're saying. Yeah, but thank you guys. Yeah. Love you guys. And thank you, Reese. So nice to see you, man.
It was really fun. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for ways to win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt, so throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hey, dear listener, do you enjoy listening to us ramble incoherently about Canadian politics and history? Boy, do we have a special fucking treat for you. We've got our first ever official live show at a bar.
It's at Two Crows Brewing on Brunswick Street in Halifax on Sunday, May the 26th at 8 p.m. And if you go to CanadianPoliticsIsBoring.com, if you look at the banner at the top, it will take you to the tickets so that you can book a ticket and come and spend some quality time. It is going to be a very intimate affair. There are like only about 50 tickets available.
It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to drink a lot. We're going to quiz. Reese is going to quiz me at the end, but he's also going to quiz the audience and see if they know more than I do. And any alcohol you buy, Reese and I, we promise to drink it, no matter how much it is. If you want to hold our hair while we barf in the plants outside of the bar, we'll do that for you.
So go to CanadianPoliticsIsBoring.com, click the banner at the top, and on Sunday, May the 26th, at Two Crows Brewing on Brunswick Street, we will see you there.